Would you agree with me when I say this, that we live in an age of celebrity? And it's not just that we kind of follow celebrities and so on. People have done that for years. Nothing new about that, but now we can be celebrities. So that reminds me, actually. Hold on a second, sorry. Okay, just to make sure. Sorry about that. Right, just coming back to the sermon. The problem is with wanting to be a celebrity is that some people become celebrities for good things, and some people become celebrities because they've done very bad things. For example, nobody would ever have heard of a trader in Singapore called Nick Leeson. Anyone heard of Nick Leeson? He brought down Barings Bank, Britain's oldest merchant bank, with debts of £827 million through rogue trading. If he hadn't done that, you'd never have heard of him. And a GP working in Todmorden and Hyde, never have heard of him. Probably most of you don't know, apart from ones with West Yorkshire Mancunian connections, where Todmorden actually is and where Hyde actually is. You'd never have heard of the places or the person. Dr. Harold Shipman not administered deliberately lethal doses of opiates to probably more than 250 of his patients. And you'd never have heard of the obscure governor of a province on the eastern edge of the Roman Empire, around about 30 AD, had Pontius Pilate not been responsible for the death of Jesus of Nazareth, you'd never have heard of him. There's only one inscription that's been found, which is, this is a copy of it. It's at Caesarea. But you can see there's mention of, this bit here says, Pontius Pilatus. Pontius Pilate, that's the only inscription that's ever been found with his name on it, but he is immortalized in the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. There's a lot about Pontius Pilate in these Gospels. You'd never have heard of him otherwise had it not been for one decision. He's mentioned in the book of Acts. He's mentioned in Paul's first letter to Timothy. He's mentioned in the historic creeds of the church, the Apostles' Creed, the Nicene Creed. The Nicene Creed says this about Pontius Pilate, speaking of Jesus, crucifixus etiam pro nobis sub Pontio Pilato, passus et sepultus est. And what that means is he was crucified for us under Pontius Pilate, suffered death, and was buried. And that is, Pontius Pilate is immortalized for the one decision which he made. It was a dreadful decision. It was a miscarriage of justice of the worst kind, where he sentenced to death someone he knew was innocent and released instead a murderer. And as a result, he's a celebrity, but for the wrong reason, in the sense that he did something which was bad. We're coming in Mark's Gospel to Mark chapter 15, verses 1 to 15. I've said a few times as we've been going through Mark that Mark's account is a very abbreviated account. It's just got one purpose in mind. It's just to get the facts in front of us that Jesus is the Son of God. He is the Savior. That's what he came to do. And when we get to this section, Mark 15, 1 to 15, the account of Jesus' trial before Pontius Pilate is very, very abbreviated. And I think it's perhaps too abbreviated for us really to understand what's going on and why Pilate came to the decision that he came to. So the title I've given to the message this morning, Under Pontius Pilate, and what I want to do is something slightly different. I spent quite a wee while this week trying to pull together all four accounts of Jesus' trial before Pontius Pilate and make them into some kind of coherent whole that will enable you to understand what's happening. So what I want to do this morning, something slightly different, I'm not going to go through Mark's Gospel in sequence, but what I want to do is read you the story, okay? I'll just tell you the story of Jesus' trial before Pontius Pilate from all four Gospel accounts, kind of merged together. Now, a few uncertainties about what goes where, but I've tried to stick it together so that it makes a bit of sense to you. And the reason I want to do this is really to answer two questions. Now, the first question is, why did Pontius Pilate take this decision? What were the factors that brought him to this point where he handed over the innocent Son of God to be crucified and released a murderer instead? Why did he do that? And the second question I want to answer is, what is the significance of Pilate's decision for God's plan of salvation? Okay, these two questions. So first of all, I just want to read the story to you. It's quite long. It's too long, actually, to go up on the PowerPoint, so you're just going to have to shut your eyes if you don't want to look at me and just listen to the story. Listen to what God's word says. The trial of Jesus of Nazareth before Pontius Pilate, under Pontius Pilate. He was crucified, suffered, and was buried. Very early in the morning, the chief priests with the elders, the teachers of the law, and the whole Sanhedrin, that's the ruling council of the Jews, made their plans. They decided Jesus should be crucified or handed over at least to the Romans. So they bound Jesus and led him away to the palace of the Roman governor, Pontius Pilate. To avoid ceremonial uncleanness, they did not enter the palace because they wanted to be able to eat the Passover. So Pilate came out to them. You can imagine the scene. This is early in the morning. Pilate is probably in his bed asleep. And as somebody says, "Excuse me, sire, the Jewish leaders are at the door." "What in the world do they want at this time of the morning?" "I don't know, sire, but it's something to do with the Nazarene." "Oh, Jesus. Oh, okay. So Pilate comes out to them and he says, "What charges are you bringing against this man?" And they replied, "If he were not a criminal, we would not have handed him over to you." How cheeky. This is the Roman governor. And this is the response. "Well, we must have brought him to you for a good reason, mustn't we?" And Pilate is instantly on the back foot here. So keep that thought in your mind, that Pilate is on the back foot. He's being pushed from this point onwards into a corner. Pilate said, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law." "But we have no right to execute anyone," they objected. This took place to fulfill what Jesus had said about the kind of death he was going to die. Crucifixus. Okay, hold that in your mind. He had to be crucified. I'll tell you why in a few minutes. Pilate then went back inside the palace. He summoned Jesus and asked him, "Are you the King of the Jews?" Jesus said, "Is that your own idea, or did others talk to you about me?" Pilate replied, "Am I a Jew? Your own people and chief priests handed you over to me. What is it you've done?" Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now my kingdom is from another place." "You are a king then?" Pilate said. Jesus answered, "You say that I'm a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." "What is truth?" retorted Pilate. There's a question for our postmodern world. What is truth? You hear about post-truth. This is Pilate's question. What is truth? The truth is standing in front of him. With this, he went out again to the Jews gathered there, and he said, "I find no basis for a charge against him." But they insisted, "He stirs up the people all over Judea by his teaching. He started in Galilee and has come all the way here." On hearing this, Pilate asked if the man was a Galilean. When he learned that Jesus was under Herod's jurisdiction — Herod was the ruler of Galilee — he sent him to Herod, who was also in Jerusalem at that time. When Herod saw Jesus, he was greatly pleased, because for a long time he had been wanting to see him. From what he had heard about him, he hoped to see him perform a sign of some sort. He wanted to see a miracle. He plied him with many questions, but Jesus gave him no answer. The chief priests and the teachers of the law were standing there, vehemently accusing him. Then Herod and his soldiers ridiculed and mocked Jesus. Dressing him in an elegant robe, they sent him back to Pilate. That day, Herod and Pilate became friends. Before this, they'd been enemies. So Pilate called together the chief priests, the rulers, and the people, and he said to them again, "You brought me this man as one who was inciting the people to rebellion. I've examined him in your presence, have found no basis for your charges against him. Neither has Herod, for he has sent him back to us. As you can see, he has done nothing deserving of death." The chief priests, however, began to accuse him, saying, "We've found this man subverting our nation. He opposes payment of taxes to Caesar and claims to be Messiah, a king." So Pilate again asked Jesus, "Aren't you going to answer? See all the things that they accuse you of." But Jesus made no reply, and Pilate was amazed. So Pilate went out again to the Jews gathered there and said, "It's your custom for me to release to you one prisoner at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release the King of the Jews?" He knew that the Jews had handed Jesus over for self-interest. But the chief priests shouted back, "No, not him. Give us Barabbas." Barabbas was in prison with the rebels who had committed murder in the uprising. There'd already been a rebellion in Pilate's time against Roman rule. And Barabbas was a terrorist, one of the ringleaders, and he's in prison awaiting execution. Then they say, "Give us Barabbas." Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. Why did he do that? Perhaps this will appease them. They'll see a bit of blood and torn flesh, and maybe that will be enough for them. He didn't need to have Jesus whipped. He said, "He's innocent. He's done nothing." He had him flogged. The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns, put it on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe and went out to him again and again, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews." They slapped him in the face. Once more, Pilate came out and said to the Jews gathered there, "Look, I'm bringing him out to you." And you can hear the kind of exasperation, the repetition. "I'm bringing him out to you to let you know I find no basis for a charge against him." And when Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, Pilate said to them, "Here is the man. Behold the man," it says in some translations. As soon as the chief priests and their officials saw him, they shouted, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Pilate answered, "You take him and crucify him." It's a daft thing to say because they couldn't do that. It's only the Romans that could crucify them. "As for me, I find no basis for a charge against him." The Jewish leaders insisted, "We have a law. And according to that law, he must die because he claimed to be the Son of God." When Pilate heard this, he was even more afraid. And he went back inside the palace. "Where do you come from?" he asked Jesus. Jesus gave him no answer. "Do you refuse to speak to me?" Pilate said. "Don't you realize I have power either to free you or to crucify you?" And Jesus answered, "You would have no power over me." Listen to this bit. "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above." Key statement of Jesus. We'll come back to that in just a minute. "The one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin." And from then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free, but the Jewish leaders kept shouting, "If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar." That was it. That was the thing. When Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judge's seat at a place known as a stone pavement, which in Aramaic is Gabbatha. It was the day of preparation of the Passover. It was about the sixth hour. When Pilate was sitting on the judge's seat, his wife sent him this message from his wife: "Don't have anything to do with this innocent man, because I have suffered a great deal today in a dream because of him. Here is your king," Pilate said to the Jews. But they shouted, take him away, crucify him. Shall I crucify your king? We have no king but Caesar, they answered. And when Pilate saw he was getting nowhere, instead an uproar was starting, he took water and he washed his hands in front of the crowd, and he said, I'm innocent of this man's blood. Not that washing his hands made any difference, but a symbolic act as if to expunge his guilt. I'm innocent of this man's blood. It's your responsibility. It's yours. All the people answered, his blood is on us and on our children. Wanting to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas to them and handed Jesus over to be crucified.